A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 12, 1998, in the series, Can I Honestly Believe?, entitled, Do I Need Religion? The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 6, verses 1 through 8, Psalm 8, Psalm 42, and Acts 17, verse 22. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Deadlines are good for something, for people like me especially, because they make me do what I have to do anyway sometime. Make me get at it. The courier deadline is a deadline at which I have to be clear about the next month's sermon titles. And when it comes at a time when I'm thinking of a whole season, then it's considerably more complex. I'm going to begin today a sermon series, and I announced it over a month ago, having to meet that deadline, just talked about something like with mind and heart united. And then as I shared in the Courier, I was interested to find a sermon out of 1984. I found it after I had announced that theme for the summer and found out that it was the theme of a sermon in 1984. And in that sermon, I referred to 1971 when I came back from Europe, returned to this congregation, and one of the models that we lived by, a slogan, so to speak, was intellectual integrity and evangelical passion. And it simply reminded me again that those of you who have endured me all these years have been on a long pilgrimage which has reflected the passion of my life, which is to understand the faith. To understand the faith that I have prior to my understanding. Because religious experience doesn't come as the consequence of a rational analysis of reality or deep thinking on some ontological questions or metaphysical meanderings of one sort or another. Religious experience happens to us. And then we try to understand it. And religious experience is other than our understanding of it and our articulation of it and our expression of it. In a famous book of 1917, Rudolf Otto wrote on the idea of the holy. And that's where we get the commonly used phrase, popularized, I suppose, through Karl Barth in this century. But Rudolf Otto used the description of the experience of the holy or of God as the ganz andere, the holy other. That mystery beyond, that breakthrough to us, but breaking through to us, making us unalterably aware of the reality and the presence, remains the hidden one, the hidden mystery. The religious experience, Otto describes, I think, very, very wonderfully when he says, it is the feeling that remains when the concept fails. It is an experience that transcends the possibility of conceptualizing it, articulating it, putting it into idea form. But put it into idea form, we will. We seem to have to do that. At least a few funny people like me do. And I suspect that you're here because you're a funny person like that too. We will try to understand. The understanding is never the same as the experience in itself, but being human as we are, rational creatures, reflective, self-conscious, we will inevitably think about and seek to bring to expression, at least in some symbolic form, that which will point beyond itself to the experience that is broken in upon us. That seems to be the universal human experience, and that is the origin of religion. Religion has at least these three basic components. There is that which is believed, or the doctrine. There is the mode of worship, devotion, or practice, the ritual, the liturgy, which seeks to be an expression, an action that gives expression to the idea. And then there is the drawing out of the implications of the experience for daily living or ethics. So, doctrine or theology, cult or worship, ethics or morality. That's the nature of human religion. And again, we do it. I have said this before a number of times, but I'm going to say it again until you wake up in the middle of the night and repeat it to yourself. Religion is a human creative construction. Religions don't fall out of heaven full blown. We make them up. Not arbitrarily or capriciously, but we make them up in response to the inbreaking of the sacred or the holy or God, the experience that is still there when the concept fails, but the experience that drives us to seek to articulate the nature of it. We construct our human religion in response to the inbreaking of the mystery that is God. Not all religions are equally valid or helpful. There are religions that are demonic and dehumanizing. And the best religion, religious expressions, have a shadow side. But it's so critical that we see that our religions are human, creative, imaginative constructions as a consequence of the inbreaking of the holy. Now, not everyone has the inbreaking of the holy and scurries about to construct their own religion. We grow up in traditions, and we are conditioned to meet the mystery in a certain way. And there have been those figures in the past who have been so filled with the experience of the holy that they became the exemplar and, in their formulations, a tradition issued forth. But the fact remains, human religions are human, creative, imaginative constructions, and you can tamper with them without putting God in peril. You can play with them, and God will be just fine. Now, if religions born at some founding moment through some significant individual or group seek to bring that to expression, then how will they bring it to expression? Well, they will bring it to expression, and the only way that is possible for any human being to bring anything to expression, they'll bring it to expression in terms, terminology, conceptuality, perceptions, understanding, worldview that they have at the time. Can't be any other way. If it were any other way, they'd be talking to the wind. It would be some kind of esoteric secret society. But not if they're interested in sharing the experience of the inbreaking of the holy, then they will seek to give expression to that in terms that everybody understands, because that is the stuff out of which we give expression to those deep experiences of our life. So if your tradition is 2,000 years old, or 3,000 years old, then what shaped, what gave the stuff out of which to create it is also 2,000 or 3,000 years old. That's why we have in biblical testimony to the experience of God, for example, a three-storied universe. Heaven is up, hell is down, and we're caught between. And we are able to do some translating on Ascension Day when we celebrate the fact that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us and were crucified and risen, returned, so to speak. And we say Jesus ascended. We don't need to decode that. We do it almost automatically. We translate that. We know that in the universe as we know it, you can't go up. You can go out in any direction. Infinite in all directions. I think that was somebody, Dyson Freeman, wasn't it? Infinite in all directions. But we can translate that, and it doesn't cause us cognitive dissonance. But Edward O. Wilson, in his recently published book, Consilience, talks about his experience as a good Southern Baptist lad who went under and went through the evangelical experience of conversion and all the rest, but must have been a curious mind from the beginning, and eventually went off to school, and he says, I chose to doubt. And then in his distinguished career as a scientist, a biologist, he recognized the place of religion in people's lives. It's all in a little quote that's in your liturgy. He recognized the importance of religion in giving an orientation and giving meaning and significance to life and so forth. But he also recognized that he was one person who could not continue to understand reality as reality is continually to be unfolded in our presence before the pursuit of the natural scientist, and still somehow or other believe that there was a literal anchoring of conceptuality back 2,000 or 3,000 years. He said, I can't believe that the final revelation of God was put in stone by an agricultural culture 2,000 years ago at the eastern end of the Mediterranean. In other words, the stuff that we use to put together a conception or a picture of the experience that cannot be expressed is dated, necessarily so. And then what happens? Well, life moves on. Understanding of the world, of the human person, of human society moves on. And at an increasingly rapid pace. And then we get the cognitive dissonance. Still feels the same. The inbreaking of the holy in a 1,000 years before the advent of Jesus Christ, or 2,000 years after, the inbreaking of the holy is somewhat similar, I suppose. Rudolf Otto says it is an experience of fascination and terror. It is wholly other than our ordinary kind of experience. But the articulation of that in the stuff of everyday language, of everyday experience, that rooted way back there, no longer can express that mystery in terms of the universe as it has unfolded before our eyes and our minds. And so, there are those who have just joined the Church Alumni Association, just dropped out, because it doesn't make sense. And no one has helped them to translate the experience of the mystery into conceptuality that is consistent with our everyday knowledge in our time. And so what happens is that religion gets pitched and people enter into a kind of secular existence where there is no longer any connection to that mystery beyond, and very likely little cultivation of the depths of the spirit of the human person. And so it is so very necessary, if we would continue to worship with good heart and freedom, if we would think with abandon, and if we would live with integrity, then it is a constant challenge to update the data that goes into the making of the model or the paradigm of spiritual experience in our day. And I believe that that is the challenge that is always before the church. The thing that scares me is that someone has said, the times will come to a point of crisis out of which chaos will arise a new idea. But the new idea that arises in an age out of the chaos of that particular time, that new idea probably will not be able to be received by the culture that gave it rise. It'll take another generation or two or three when that new idea finally becomes orthodox opinion to be defended by the guardians of tradition. But nonetheless, the challenge, I believe, to the church is to say it again. Think about the experience and try to say it again in a way that will be understood, that will create not cognitive dissonance, but connection with our everyday experience. I want this summer to be thinking about some rather ordinary questions and say, can I honestly believe? And all I can do this morning is to say, in answer to the first question, do I really need religion? No. No. I'm not about to say that there are not people who have found a humane existence, who have been able to live an exemplary life, who find meaning and purpose, and who forswear any religious engagement whatsoever. And certainly, I don't need religion if religion is for me a safety net or an insurance program against the possibility of eternal damnation. Nor do I need religion in order to gain a pass into the gates of paradise. I've given up that kind of religion, and I would suggest for your health's sake, you ought to also. It's still alive and well, and there's maybe more of it. It seems like there's more of it because it bombards us in the media all over the place. And dear, blessed, holy Pope John Paul is trying so hard to ensure that the rules and the regulations of yesterday will be perpetuated into tomorrow. That kind of religion, none of us really needs. But much of the church thinks people need it. I read last night again the Grand Inquisitor of Dostoevsky. Chilling, chilling. Jesus appears in Seville, in Spain, during the time of the Inquisition. They had just burned 100 heretics at the stake. And Jesus appears before a crowd of people, and the cardinal, the church ecclesiast, sees him, has him thrown into jail, then goes to speak to him and tells him how the freedom of which Jesus spoke and for which he gave his life cannot be handled by the people. The people need authority. They live by miracle, mystery, and authority. Let them submit. Let them be slaves, simply obedient, unthinking. Give them bread. That's what the masses need. Not the freedom of spirit of which Jesus spoke and incarnated. And then the cardinal says, after Jesus refuses to respond, but only arises and plants a kiss on the wizened old face, the cardinal says, "Get out! Get out! And never return!" Well, we don't need a lot more of that religion, even though there's a lot of it alive and well on planet Earth. Do we need it? No. No, not absolutely. But I think that there's a loss without it. I think there's a loss to our humanity and a loss to world community. The scripture lessons were just to indicate different experiences of God. I'm used to watching the sunset. It's been magnificent. But Friday morning, I had to take Nancy to the airport early, and I caught a sunrise, a huge flaming globe just over the horizon. I said, "My goodness, it comes up like it goes down." I'm not a morning person. But the sunset, or the moon, the stars. Say, "Oh Lord, our Lord, how magnificent is your name in all the earth. When I consider the stars, the moon, the wonder of it all, I say, what am I?" A sense of humility and smallness before the vastness and the wonder of the world. But I am, a little less than God. How can I give expression to that in a secular fashion? What if I can't sing? What if I have no song? no songwriter, no one to whom to sing, or in life's anxieties and depressions, the hunger for God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Or like Isaiah, to come someday and have the place filled with smoke and to hear the rumbling and to be encountered by the mystery, the fascinating and terrorizing ministry, and to feel one's own guilt and uncleanness and unworthiness, and then to hear the word, you're cleansed, your sin is forgiven, and to be commissioned to significant living service. You don't need religion, but I believe that to fail seriously, to engage, to practice, to be observant, is a very great loss and leads to a truncated human experience and a distortion of all that we're intended to be. Paul said to the Athenians, you're really religious. There's an idol to an unknown God, just in case you missed one. I don't need that kind of religion. But yesterday I had the privilege of being invited to the bar mitzvah of Rabbi Alan Alpert's son, Anna and Albert's son, David. And in that Jewish community, again, on bar mitzvah day, which is high celebration day, I felt the warmth. Found the solidity of family and of community. That's something I regret that I wasn't born Jewish, because it's not like being born a Christian. You have to keep worrying about becoming one. You have to get converted. You have to keep wondering if you're in or out. And Jew is just a Jew. Can't do anything about it. So they celebrate. And those who are observant, who are serious, celebrate it in wonderful warmth and community. And there's something more there than just good friends and family ties. It is in the presence of a mystery that here and there, now and again, has broken in upon us, creating awe, wonder, gratitude, drawing forth worship, enhancing our humanity, and nudging us toward the things that make for peace. You don't really need it, but you'll miss a lot if you don't have it.